NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, environmental advocates and farmers across New York are once again preparing for a courtroom fight over the Constitution Pipeline. That massive project would carry fracked natural gas from Pennsylvania through the Southern Tier and into New England. It was first proposed more than a decade ago and ultimately blocked after years of legal challenges. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett reports on activists raising alarms about the backdoor maneuvers to push the pipeline forward and why communities on both sides of the political aisle are saying no. Blood supplies are running low and Garnet Health is calling on the community to help. We'll learn more about their upcoming blood drive tomorrow and why every donation matters. Plus, the burlesque troupe Flirty Riot celebrating its one-year anniversary and local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. After the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. The man illegally deported to a prison in El Salvador this year and then brought back has now been detained by federal immigration agents. Kiomar Abrego Garcia is accused of human smuggling. He's denied the charges. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says immigration officials are processing him because they will deport him to the East African nation of Uganda. More than 2,000 National Guard troops are deployed in Washington, D.C., and now they are armed. Federal data show violent crime in the city has dropped to a 30-year low, but President Trump says he could expand a military presence to other democratically run cities, such as Chicago. NPR's Tamara Keith says Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker is objecting.
Governor Pritzker said in no uncertain terms over the weekend that he doesn't want the National Guard sent to Chicago. And normally, the governor has to call up the Guard. Here's part of what he said, quote, Donald Trump's threat to bring the National Guard to Chicago isn't about safety. It's a test of the limits of his power and a trial run for a police state. Illinois has long worked with federal law enforcement to tackle crime, but we won't let a dictator impose his will.
NPR's Tamara Keith reporting. Millions of people in the western U.S. are dealing with extreme heat and an increased risk for wildfires. NPR's Chandelise Duster has more.
Extreme heat watches and warnings are in effect for parts of California, Oregon, and Washington State. The National Weather Service says some places will see temperatures surpassing 100 degrees with little relief at night. The heat, coupled with dry conditions, is also fueling wildfires such as the Flat Fire in Oregon. Operations Section Chief Eric Perkins says they are hopeful they can prevent the blaze from spreading, but weather is making it difficult.
We are in a firefight and the weather's not that favorable.
Officials are warning residents in places facing extreme heat to stay in cool areas and drink plenty of water. Chandelise Duster, NPR News.
Stocks opened lower this morning after a big rally at the end of last week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 110 points in early trading.
There's a big coffee deal brewing. Keurig Dr. Pepper plans to buy the parent company of Peet's Coffee in a deal valued at $18 billion. Once that merger is finalized, the combined company plans to split its coffee and soft drink offerings into two separate businesses. A number of European post offices are halting most package deliveries to the U.S. this week while they try to sort out new tariff rules. Packages worth less than $800 used to be exempt from tariffs, but that loophole is set to close on Friday. The world's most valuable company, NVIDIA, is set to report quarterly earnings later this week. The chip maker is a bellwether for the artificial intelligence boom. Stocks in Asia were higher overnight. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down nearly 120 points. This is NPR. Staffers at the Federal Emergency Management Agency say the Trump administration is turning back progress the U.S. has made since Hurricane Katrina hit about 20 years ago. The FEMA workers have written a letter to Congress. They say in case of a similar disaster, they're speaking out to prevent, quote, the abandonment of the American people. The Library of Congress has acquired rare artifacts related to the beloved 1939 film The Wizard of Oz. NPR's Chloe Veltman reports the treasures include the only lyric sketch for the Over the Rainbow known to exist.
Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind.
Lyricist E.Y. Yip Harburg sketched out an early version of this line in pencil on a scrap of yellow legal paper. Now that scrap is part of the Library of Congress's collection, along with dozens of other items such as Oz composer Harold Arlen's 1939 Oscar statue for Best Original Song. Nicholas Brown Cáceres is the acting chief of the library's music division. He says Over the Rainbow nearly got left on the cutting room floor during the movie production process.
The creators had to advocate for it to get placed back in multiple times.
People can view these artifacts on display at the library from October 23rd through January 7th. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
The winner of this year's Little League World Series is Taiwan. The team shut out competitor Nevada yesterday 7-0. Taiwanese pitcher Lin Chin-Tsi allowed just one hit in five innings to help his team win. You're listening to NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Environmental advocates and farmers in New York State are preparing to fight a legal battle to stop construction of the Constitution Pipeline that would bring fracked gas from central PA into New York and parts of New England. They've been here before, winning a long-fought legal battle in the 2010s. Now, with renewed pressure from the Trump administration's energy agenda and signs that Governor Kathy Hochul's administration may be softening its stance, opponents fear the project could get a green light. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with Annie Marie Garty, attorney and environmental activist, about the suspicious ways this pipeline is being moved to construction and bipartisan rejection of the pipeline.
On the section of their website detailing the newly proposed Constitution Pipeline, one of three that would run through New York State transporting fracked gas sourced from central Pennsylvania, the Oklahoma-based Williams Company says, quote, "The Constitution Pipeline isn't just about moving gas, it's about moving forward." But opponents of the pipeline in New York feel like they're moving backwards. Originally proposed in 2012, the Constitution Pipeline is an extension of two already existing gas transports that would run through privately owned farming fields in Broome, Delaware, Shenango, and Schoharie counties. After a long-fought legal battle beginning over a decade ago, the coalition Stop the Constitution Pipeline worked with state agencies and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the DEC, to successfully block Constitution's proposals for the pipeline. Now, with the Trump administration's commitment to fracking and forceful intervention in states' energy sources, Governor Kathy Hochul may be allowing for the revival of the pipeline projects in order to secure other sources of renewable energy, namely the Empire Wind Project. To learn more about these past legal battles and what to expect from the newly proposed Northeast Supply Enhancement Project, or NESE, I spoke with Anne-Marie Garty, an attorney and one of the founders of Stop the Pipeline. Garty also represented the coalition with PACE Environmental Litigation Clinic. She joins me over the phone. How did you get involved with the activism surrounding the opposition to the Constitution Pipeline? Had it always been only in upstate New York, or was the one going into the city also proposed as well?
Well, at that point, NESE was not proposed because this was well before NESE
was formulated by Williams.
So in 2012, on May 16th, 2012, there was a local upstate meeting held by the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Franklin, New York, for farmers, encouraging them to lease their land for this pipeline. And there was a huge amount of opposition. I had already been involved in a lot of the anti-fracking movement in New York State starting in 2008. If you have a fracking, if you're drilling for gas, you have to transport it first through gathering lines, and then there are the interstate
So this was like a project that was nearby. It was happening while fracking was on. And there was a lot of local opposition, I could tell from that first meeting. And these are mostly conservative people who live in this area.
Can you talk about what some of their opposition was?
The initial meeting was for farmers and landowners whose lands would be taken for the pipeline through eminent domain if they didn't sign an agreement. So this is something that people who live in upstate New York, they hate those two words, eminent domain. Their land is their land, and it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican on that front. And this isn't for what they consider to be a public project. This was for some multi-billion-dollar corporation to come in and make a profit off of their land. They only saw it as a negative for themselves. But it hurt their land, and their land is everything to them. It's like family.
In terms of working with the government back then, getting your concerns heard, getting the concerns of the farmers heard, how willing were they to work with you back then? And what do you feel like is one of the major contrasts to what you're experiencing with the Hochul administration now?
So we were mostly dealing with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in the beginning, like from 2014 to 2016. In December of 2016, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, approved the project. So the applicant, Constitution Pipeline, applied to FERC. FERC has all of these requirements in order to have an application move forward, one of which is to submit to FERC a landowner list and to have notified all of the landowners of the proposed route because they're not building on their own land. They have no right to be on their land. So that's the first step. And they have to put in like 12 or 13 resource reports, and FERC does the environmental impact statement, and FERC almost always approves the project. So we knew that we were going to lose that process. I was mostly working with the local community along the route in order to get them to understand the process and help them to submit comments and that sort of thing through the process, because the fight wouldn't really start, in my opinion, until FERC had approved and we had to convince the state to deny the full land water quality certification. And that's exactly what we did.
In terms of the proposal for this new version of the pipeline, I'm aware there are three, but does this, specifically the Constitution Pipeline, does this have a new route? Like, is there anything different about the proposal of it now than what you were dealing with back in the mid-2010s?
Well, we'd like to know, because this is what's really strange with going on, is that Constitution has not filed an application with FERC. There's no application in front of the federal government for this project, so we don't know what the project is. We only know what happened before and after DEC denied the 401 water quality certification. Constitution sued them in different courts, and that lawsuit went on for 5 years, those different suits and appeals and everything. And the state was fighting to uphold its decisions, which it did. It won every single court case that was brought. And for me, the strange part is after having us gone through all of this, we were the first group to stop a pipeline. And then the state defended its actions for all of those years. And now to have the state reverse all of that effort in order to get a wind farm? I don't know. It's like mysterious to me why that's happening. Like throwing away 10 years of effort.
There are people arguing that the explanation of the decision on behalf of Governor Hochul is that allowing this pipeline would be a quid pro quo in order to get the Empire Wind project. But my question is, how can you be both pro-pipeline and pro-wind? And is it possible to assume that POCA will ultimately cave to both if the Trump administration forced their hand enough.
All I know is that this pipeline was not stopped for political reason. It was not stopped because of climate change. It was stopped because of water quality impacts. FERC can't just revive the Constitution pipeline. They have to have a new application and everything. So why the state is considering a 401 water quality certification application by Constitution when there's no application in front of FERC is, I think, wrong. We don't know what the project is. None of these 700 plus landowners along the route know, have been notified by Constitution or FERC or anybody else that this is happening. This could happen on their land, and they haven't received a notice in the mail that their land might get used for a project. It's like completely going backwards to do what's being done right now. I've requested documents from the DEC and haven't gotten them yet. When DEC filed the notice of complete application, then we'll find out more. But we're very much in the dark. We're preparing to fight the fight, but it's not going through the usual process.
Anne Marie, thank you very much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, why summer is the most critical time for blood donations and how you can help. This is Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dold. You know, we've got a holiday weekend coming up, and you should start it right. So come out to Putt-Putt for Public Radio. This is an evening of mini golf happening this Friday at Putt-Putt Van Winkle, County Route 6, Bovina Center, New York, in the heart of the Catskills. We'll have drinks, snacks, everything you need to play mini golf, all for $15, all to support Radio Catskill. Putt-Putt for Public Radio, 5 to 7 Friday in Bovina.
America's boys are falling behind in school. We're launching a special series to find out why. Episode 1, How Do Boys Learn?
He told the teacher this is boring. And he said he wanted to go home.
He calls it 6 cruel hours of our lives. You know, an acronym for school.
Don't miss the start of Falling Behind, the Miseducation of America's Boys. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The need for blood is urgent. Blood donations typically drop in the summer when people are traveling or schools are out. But at the same time, hospitals often see an increase in accidents and trauma cases. For patients undergoing surgery, cancer treatment, or living with chronic conditions, a steady blood supply can mean the difference between life and death. At Garnet Health Medical Center, the Level 2 Trauma Center and Emergency Department are teaming up with the New York Blood Center for a community blood drive tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 at Garnet Health Medical Center in Middletown. Joining us now is Susan Kanick in Middletown, the Emergency Department Nurse Manager at Garnet Health Medical Center, to talk about the importance of this blood drive and how the community can step up to help save some lives. We should note Garnet Health is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
What's the significance?
How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. What's the significance of holding this blood drive in the trauma center and with the emergency department, that combination of the two of you?
So every day, everybody comes to work in the emergency room, trauma centers all over New York, but especially Garnet. We see an increase of traumas and, you know, accidents over the summer. We use a lot of blood during the summertime. Blood shortages are critical, especially for August. People traveling. If anybody has ever driven 17, which I'm sure everybody has, you see all the traffic, constant accidents. We see a lot. Every day people come into work in the emergency room and the trauma team. We're unsung heroes. We want everybody to be a hero. People who can donate blood or eligible can be heroes too. Come donate tomorrow. Our popular type blood types are O negative, O positive. You know, there's a lot of reasons to give blood. You know, people are on vacations. I know this is a busy week. It's also a busy travel week, weekend coming up. That's who we're holding it tomorrow. If you are available to donate, please do so. We have, if you're worried about whether you're eligible, please visit nybc.org or call 1-800-933-2566. And you can find if you are eligible. Most people are. They've changed the eligibility requirements. So please look it up and try to donate tomorrow. We are having it in our conference center at Garnet Health. You'll see signs when you pull into Middletown campus. Also want to reach out to different ethnic groups because it's critical. Blood types are inherited. Having a donor-based ethnic group, diverse, improves chances for those who have sickle cell. It's the recipients have complex needs and better outcomes to receive blood from people with similar markers. So we're reaching out to all groups in the area. Please come and donate.
We saw a stark example of that increase in accidents and trauma cases a few days ago when five people were killed and dozens injured after that tour bus crashed in upstate New York on the way back from Niagara Falls. People out and about, as you said, this week traveling. So the blood supply can mean that difference between life and death. But also, we talked about patients undergoing, you know, just cancer treatments or surgeries that were maybe routine or living with chronic conditions. Talk a little bit about why that's still important to keep that blood supply there and healthy for those folks too.
Correct. You know, we have actually not only just cancer and cancer treatments, childbirth, surgeries, blood donors, blood is constantly needed for all of those people. You know, we recently, there is a camp that's local that has for sickle cell children. And, you know, as you know, they require a lot of blood also. So that's a summer camp that is locally in our area. We have seen some few kids from there. So please, you know, for the children, for those who have cancer, for constant demand for surgeries, childbirth, unfortunate accidents with childbirth, whether it's a miscarriage, and you know, it's those patients are very critical, and we see a lot of births in the area, you know, and those people need a lot of blood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unfortunate.
We know that only a small percentage of eligible people donate blood each year. That leads, you know, to some of these shortages. Is that even more acute in specific groups, as you mentioned, that might need treatment for sickle cell or other sections of the population?
Yes. Yes. So, like I said, the ethnic groups, there's better outcomes because its blood type is inherited. So if you are a certain ethnic group, please come and donate because, like I said, they will match the markers and it's better outcomes for people within those ethnic groups, especially those who receive blood quite often, whether they have cancer or sickle cell or any other, you know, issues with blood loss. So, yes, it is important. And we also have seen that, like, a decline when I spoke with the blood center, there is a decline of young people donating. So if you are 17 or older, you're able to donate also. 16 can donate with a parent's permission. And anybody over 76 years old, New York Blood Donor Center requires a written consent from the doctor, and that'll stay on file for as long as they want to donate.
Is the lack of younger folks donating, is that just education for some folks? So maybe they don't know if they're eligible or they don't know how important it is?
I think that there is, you know, they do run some drives during the school year in some of the high schools. I know our local high school here in Chester, New York, ran a drive last year, and which is like walking distance from my house. Uh-huh. But they they do run drives, and there are some kids. Kids are afraid. And honestly, there's nothing to be afraid of. And the employees at the New York Blood Donor Center are so used to, you know, kids with the anxiety of donating. But when I was there, I did see a lot of kids donate. So, you know, I think it's lack of education and, the lack of, you know, basically education that they, you know, that they are eligible. Anybody 17 and older and 16 with a note from their parent.
And let's remind folks a little bit more about that eligibility so that we're informing as many people to get out there tomorrow to donate. 17 or older is the standard, but 16-year-olds can donate with parent or guardian consent.
With a parent consent, correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You must weigh at least 110 pounds?
Correct. And with children, there's a different requirement for boys and girls. And that is on nybc.org on the internet. Or if they just would rather not search it, they can call the 1-800-933-2566 number for eligibility.
And this may seem like common sense, but you can't donate if you have an illness, cold, flu, et cetera.
Correct. If you're currently ill.
Yeah. And then this is interesting, too, to remind folks, if you've had some recent procedures like a tattoo or a piercing, that might require a temporary deferral.
Correct. So there are certain states, I think New York State is one of them, that you have to wait 3 months, I believe. But that, once again, is all in on the website.
Yeah.
But there are certain states, tattoos, 3 months deferral in New York, Pennsylvania, and Vermont, which is kind of close to us. There is no deferral in Jersey. So if anybody's listening from Jersey, and you had a recent tattoo, you can come and donate.
Come on over. Also, before your donation, eat a meal. Make sure to eat a meal within 2 hours of your donation. Drink fluids. Drink plenty of water before, during, and after. And bring an ID. Bring a valid form of ID. So, again, common sense stuff, but you want to remind folks. And again, let's remind folks about the address and time of the event and how they can schedule a time to donate if they want to.
Once again, they can go to nybc.org to schedule, if you would like to schedule, a time frame. And then we also take walk-ins. And it's at 707 East Main Street, Middletown, Conference Center entrance. There will be signs to guide you. That's tomorrow from 10 to 4. And, you know, they'll have some juice, drinks, water, snacks, available, also to, you know, to give away. If you're not feeling well, they will keep you there, raise your feet until you're feeling better to go. And your blood regenerates like very quickly. So it's not like you're going to be walking around less of a pint of blood. But one donation can save 2 lives. So that's why we're asking everybody to be a hero. Come and be a hero tomorrow. Join the Hero Club of the emergency room and trauma team. Okay. And, you know, it'll make you feel good to give. You know, it always feels good to give.
Yeah. And you know what? With the ER and trauma team there, too, you'll see the great work and meet the great people that they're doing there. And thank you for the work you are doing, Susan. Susan Kanick, Emergency Department Nurse Manager at Garnet Health Medical Center. That blood drive again tomorrow from 10 to 4 at 707 East Main Street in Middletown. Walk-ins welcome, or you can schedule a time at donate.nybc.org. Susan, thank you so much. And again, it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. Trust me, it doesn't hurt. And thank you for having me on.
Thank you. We'll take a break. And when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Congress has approved a White House request to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and enriching everyday life. But without federal funding, we are relying on your support now more than ever. please make your gift to this station today. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Monday, and that means James B. Huntington is here with some local economic perspective.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to
local author and economist James B. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Now, we're always good to have you here on a Monday morning to start us off with a look at the economy and answering the big question. So here's a big one. What are the most important things now happening with the American economy? There's a lot.
Well, they devoted an episode to the Ezra Klein show on that this recently. That is a factual issues discussing program, which is rather more sophisticated and factual than a lot of other TV talk shows. And the things they came up with on here were talking about tariffs, where we are getting some problems with it affecting the economy and such. The current rate, the effective tariff rate, is 18%, and it was 2.5% when Trump took office. We also have inventories starting to dry up. The things that companies bought before the tariffs took effect are getting used up, and as the respondent, as the guest said, there's just not enough space in the margins for importers and retailers to eat the cost of these tariffs without passing them down to consumers. Then we have China and Mexico. Both of them are subject to tariffs now, but it's going to be a lot more. And the additional thought they have here is that we're not in a recession yet. We could be, but for now, we're expecting that tariffs, if they continue at rates that they're now scheduled, would knock about 0.4% off the American gross domestic product indefinitely, year after year, such. Then they talked about artificial intelligence, a big thing going on here. So there are some people in economics who think that if it were not for AI, for the boost it's giving to jobs and stocks and the economy in general, we would be in a recession. So that's something we can be happy about there, that we do have that. We're looking now at probably what's going to happen with AI is a massive forward leap in per worker productivity, even if, as many people are saying now, it's not going to cut out as many jobs because it's so poor quality and sloppy in office things and in the niches where it's doing so well. It needs people to look over what it's producing also. And one example they have is ATMs, a similar historic example where people were talking that the number of bank tellers was going to be slashed because of ATMs were being put up. But a long time later, there were more bank tellers than there ever were in the past. Mm. But then after a while, for some number of years, that went away. And as it now stands, the number is down a lot, certainly per customer or per bank, to what it was before. As well, we have probable job or labor increases in some areas, which are going to have various effects, but that could be worsened or if the immigrants, legal and illegal, and the people who are being sent away get sent out of the country in any substantial numbers more than they are now. Then we have jobs and if you break the labor markets down by sectors, you find that healthcare is creating almost all the growth. And other fields, they're going down, so that doesn't look good for other areas, especially IT. And whether we're going to be able to trust the job numbers with people getting fired and such by presidential fiat and pressure put on them, which they're saying that that even the heads of these departments don't have great individual effect on them. So probably it's going to stay much the same. But for now, the numbers are as good as they ever were.
Let's talk about the housing market here. Is it a buyer's market? Are people buying? What's going on in the housing market?
Well, the headline of an article I have here says it's a buyer's market and nobody's buying. And what that is causing, if you look at Redfin or Zillow, you'll see that the house listings are just sitting there, where some are lowering prices, and sometimes that actually doesn't help, which is strange. They may need to lower them more, but some of them, they're just people selling houses are just sort of waiting for the thing to blow over somehow. We're seeing everybody frozen. It's connected with a low rate of people moving for jobs. A lot of people are just stuck where they are. They can't really afford to leave. So that's hurting the housing market a great deal. 15% to 19% drops in sales in what used to be some of the strongest places like Austin, Miami, Las Vegas. Now the inventory is really exceeding demand a lot. And the mortgages right now are 6.58%, which is the lowest level really since October of the past year. A lot of people would like it to go down to 6%, which could happen with, let's say, a 1% decrease in the discount rate, which is the one they announce changes on about 8 times a year. So it's still not terrible, but so it's a remarkably slow housing market, and it may start having effects on other areas as it goes on.
Yeah, there was some data from Zillow's home value index showing some upstate counties, though, seeing some home value growth. For example, Ulster County saw a 1.5% increase in home value as continued demand for second homes and ex-urban living increases. But overall, as you're saying, this housing market seems to be a little stalled elsewhere. Let's talk about this thing I saw in the headlines over the weekend. Some European and Asian postal services holding back package delivery to the United States. Why is that? And who's holding back those deliveries?
Well, we're losing the tariff exemption. It used to be, they called it de minimis, but it wasn't really very minimal, where you could send packages directly to from companies in other countries to houses in the U.S. As long as it was worth $800 or less, there would be no duties. And now that's gone away. So there is a customs hassle. It's not very well established how it's really going to work going forward if there are going to be tens of millions of packages that are going to have to be looked over in some way. We have DHL, which is a large international carrier and Europe's largest, are saying that the German post office and DHL Germany will not be able to send things over to the U.S. anymore. We also have postal services in Denmark, Sweden, Italy, Austria, France, and Belgium saying they're going to pause shipments to the U.S. They may just be looking for stability because some of these tariffs sort of come and go, but it is getting to be a big problem. And not only will things from other countries cost more, but they may not deliver them at all for a while. So check into that if you're buying things from other countries, because there may be some real hang-ups.
And Then what else can we talk about in terms of jobs in the United States? And in terms of, you always find fun terms here, job hugging. Why is that getting more and more popular, and what is it?
Well, it's just a term for people keeping their jobs, and whether they like them or not, and worker confidence in job opportunities is going down for almost all American workers. The quits rate, where people leave their jobs voluntarily, it's been around 2%, which is quite low. It's been there for the entire year, and usually it doesn't stay at levels anything like that for this long. So concerns about job security. So many more people are just choosing to stay where they are instead of moving out. It's always been a feature of really, truly strong job markets that people are often willing to quit sort of on speculation that they'll be able to get another position. And usually they do when the market's good, but they're running scared right now. So a lot of them are not going anywhere.
So they're staying at their homes on Pennsylvania Avenue, as it were. This is my transition to the board game story. Economic changes affecting the board game industry? What's that?
Yes, it's a surprising thing, but it's especially hitting small companies. There are a lot of board games are low issue, are made in small production runs, and they're unusually dependent on China, because a lot of the new board games, the premium ones, the ones that are being invented that have just come out in the last few years, have a lot of small parts, exactly the kind of thing, and different parts, some plastic, some paper, some cardboard, and then different things, and they are a problem, really, to manufacture anywhere other than China. So they're hitting these tariffs. They're talking about needing to raise rates. I mean, board games are really pretty expensive. I mean, a lot of them would cost $50 or so now, and that may have to go up to about $80, which isn't going to be very good with the economy the way it is, and general concern about tariffs cutting down spending. So they may need to take a long view and figure out how these can be made in the U.S., but that's a hard thing to do. And so if you're into board games and like to buy several a year or something, you might be just looking at some real price increases here.
I would not know the cost of current board games, because I think I'm still using the Monopoly game we've had since 1974.
Well, the major companies have done better. The companies like Hasbro and Mattel, who have games like Monopoly and Clue and Uno and Pictionary, those kind of games where you can get press runs in the hundreds of thousands and more, those are generally better because more of those things are made in the U.S. They're not as complicated. Even Monopoly just has the houses and hotels and tokens and then the board. Well, there are a lot of games that the combat-related games especially that have many different kinds of pieces. And again, and you are talking about small runs and not a lot of them being made by established companies, so if you want classic games, you'll probably be okay, or it would be much the same or a little bit more. That's not as bad as the new real connoisseur games.
All right, let's talk about the numbers. How were the stock, oil, metal, and crypto prices this morning, and how did they change?
Over the past week, we have changes. Gold, early this morning, was $33.62, up $15. That's exactly the same now as it was 2 weeks ago. Silver, $38.67, up 63 cents. The ratio is now 87 to 1, gold and silver. So silver is looking relatively high now, either that or the ratio says that gold might be picking up soon. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 45,632, which is up 686. That's a third fine week of about 500 or more. NASDAQ 21,497 minus 125. That's still shaky with the situation with AI and people widespreadly thinking that there will be, it could be a bubble, could be a big decrease coming in these things because companies are having remarkable trouble making money, making net profit on the thing, but still quite high. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $63.96, up $1.09. That's the first gain it's had in a few weeks, but it really is still low, and I saw some decreases on the pump in the past few days, and maybe you did too, but $1.09 isn't going to cause much of an increase, so should stay good there. Bitcoin, $111,443, down $37.81, which is down over $10,000 in 2 weeks. It fluctuates, it jumps around a lot, but it's been a poor time for it lately. British pound, 1.3496, down about half a cent. Profit-taking, perhaps? It's still quite high by most of the standards of the last years. Euro, 1.1695, is up 12 hundredths of a cent, continuing to creep up, may have better fundamentals than the British pound. And the Japanese 100 yen spent yet another week sitting at 68 cents, just going nowhere. So overall, we have tariffs that are about to take effect, may pull down these numbers here, but we never really know out here away from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue what's going to happen with the thing. So just watch, and I'll tell you in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, because
we are doing.
We're going to take off Labor Day. James B. Huntington, local economist and local author with our local economic perspective. Thank you so much for keeping an eye on things. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Flirty Riot crew is here to talk about their one-year anniversary and a brand new Wild West show that's coming up next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got the new exotic sounds of the Voodoo Five, the wild flute of Yusef Lateef, plus the Three Sons in stereo action. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, giddy up, Narrowsburg. Flirty Riot is back in town. The burlesque troupe is celebrating their one-year anniversary with a brand new Wild West show at the Darby Barn on Friday and Saturday. And then the party rides on over across the bridge to the parlor for a late-night birthday bash with DJ Cat Silk dancing and a whole lot of sass. Members of the Flirty Riot team are joining us live in studio. We've got Susan, John, Veronica, and Lacey to talk about the Wild West show and the anniversary bash and more. Good morning.
Good morning.
let's talk about the Wild West show. We'll talk about the anniversary in a second here, too. This third Wild West spectacle, I understand.
What makes that? Wild West, west of the Hudson, that is.
It is pretty wild over here. What makes this one different from the previous one, Susan?
We have a brand new cast member aboard, which we're super proud of. Lacey is here with us today, and she'll talk more about that in a minute. And the show's a brand new show. We were going to bring back something similar to what we did last year, and then we decided that our community needed something a little more fresh, a little more sassy, a little, I don't know, all the things. So that's what we're doing.
And I want to ask you about the one-year anniversary. We'll get more into the details of the Wild West show. But talk to folks about the first year of Flirty Riot and what it's meant for the community and meant for you guys. And congratulations on turning one.
Thank you. Yeah, it's actually pretty remarkable to be sitting here today. We never really thought it would come to this. I don't think we had any idea what it was going to come to. Last year when we sat here, Veronica was here. We actually hadn't even done the show yet. And when we performed our first show, it was received so well from the community. Every show since that first night has been absolutely sold out. And the incredible amount of support and love and just genuine appreciation from the community has been absolutely remarkable and uplifting.
And for folks who may not be familiar with Flirty Riot, you blend burlesque and some cirque type of performance, like a la Cirque du Soleil, I guess what we're referring to there, and campy cabaret. John, do you want to explain a little bit more and how you bring all these elements into a creative process?
Yeah, well, I'm very thankful to Susan. I was one of the original cast members, came in last year with the first show, and I never thought that we would have such a wild ride. It has been amazing. I'm one of their vocalists. Also, I do silk dance and perform a little bit of acting, and definitely it's helped evolve myself as a performer. Again, the love from the people, the community, and they've embraced us. It's been amazing. I'm super excited about this new show. It's a brand new show. We're leveling it up 100%. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Veronica, how do you, balance that sass and sparkle and mischief that's in there, to keep the energy for these shows like fresh for everybody?
Well, I mean, it's all a collaborative process. So I think that there's a lot of everyone kind of throwing different ideas out there, and it's just genuine banter. And these moments where we're rehearsing and we're like, oh my gosh, like, what if we did this? And just kind of lighting each other up and bringing out the best in each other's performances and just being bouncing off of each other, keeping it fresh and genuine.
Lacey, the newest member of the crew here, how's it been for you? And tell us a little bit more about your role in the Wild West show this Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, it's been a dream. I joined Flirty Riot for the Cosmic Chaos show over the summer, which was so fun. And I joined as a host and a singer. And so joining this next show, Wild West, I will be hosting it as Dixie Hollywood. Bring some vocals, some crazy numbers, and having a lot of fun.
Tell us a little more about Dixie Hollywood, the mistress of ceremonies here. What do you bring? What does she bring to the stage?
Ooh, she brings sass. She brings fun. She brings stupid humor, which is one of my favorite things in the universe. And you're going to have a great time. She's going to take care of you and make sure that it's a rocking good time.
We all need more stupid humor these days, I think. Susan, is there a special cameo that's involved in this at all, or something coming up you can't really talk about?
So we don't have...
that I'm asking you about live now.
So, yeah. We do have a cameo that's coming up in one of our shows. It actually won't be this particular show. I think it will be the next one that we do in November, and then everybody will have to, you know, come and see that show to see who the cameo performer is.
But all special and fun. Tell me about a favorite memory or highlight from this last year for you.
Make me cry on air now. it's all special. I think what I would really like to highlight about what is, really important to me is the fact that, we've collectively created this really safe space for expression. And so what has really fueled my heart, filled my soul is watching all of the cast members bring their talents, their ideas, their creativity to the table as to, you know, Veronica's point, to create together. And the thing is that this ensemble, this cast, it's the ensemble that's the star, you know? It's not about one particular star. It's the ensemble that's the star. And everybody really takes the time to buoy each other up and cheer each other on. And that's what makes this so extra special.
John, talk a little bit about audience interaction and how important that is to a Flirty Riot show.
Oh, it's 100%. Cosmic Chaos was a blast. It was literally a disco party. And everyone participating was part of the show.
Thank you, Pump House.
Yeah, yes. And this show is going to be the exact same thing. Everyone is part of the performance, meaning the people coming to see the show, they are part of the show as well.
And Veronica, what message or feeling or what do you hope folks walk away with from this latest show that you guys are doing?
Oh, I hope people walk away feeling just inspired and happy and just hopeful.
Lacey, as a new kid on the block, what do you think for audience?
I hope they walk away with their bellies full of liquor and their hearts full of love, and that their face hurts from smiling and laughing, and their feet hurt from stomping, and they're sweating, and they just can't get enough.
Yeah. I'm getting a hint of Mistress Dixie here. Susan, do you want to remind folks about the Wild West Show and the Birthday Bash, what they should know about timing and any age restrictions?
All right. So Wild West Burlesque Cirque and Cabaret, ages 21 and up, and it's held at the Darby Barn at the Darby Hotel, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump over the bridge from Narrowsburg. And that's this Friday and Saturday night. And then Saturday night, also same night, just right after our show. John, take it over.
Yes, yeah, so we have our 1 year anniversary or one birthday celebration at the Parlor, and that's going to be at 9 p.m. It's open to everyone, free admission, and we're going to just party hard.
DJ Cat Silk will yes. be vibing.
All right, before we go to each of you, what's your advice for someone attending a Flirty Riot show for the first time? How should they prepare to fully enjoy the experience, Susan?
Oh, come with an open heart and open mind and a loud voice.
John.
Yes. Leave everything, all reservations outside of the door.
Veronica.
Get dressed up.
All right. And the sassy Miss Dixie / Lacey.
Ooh. Did I have to be last?
Well, you earned it. You earned it, I have to say.
I gotta say, I think they need to come ready.
To party.
That's the members of Flirty Riot, Susan, John, Veronica, and Lacey. They've got their Wild West show Friday and Saturday, and then a late night birthday bash party on Saturday as well. More information on the Flirty Riot Instagram?
Instagram. That's right. At Flirty Riot NY. And thank you, Tim, so much. We appreciate Radio Catskill for all the things you bring to this community.
Well, and part of that is some sass and some fun, and you guys are bringing that too. So thank you so much. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Catskill. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. The funding cuts will hit October 1st, and they will likely hit small rural newsrooms like this one especially hard. This community could lose access to local news, national reporting from NPR, music and cultural programming, and crucial emergency alerts. Please help safeguard this free public service by donating today. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Well, it's one for the money.
On the next Fresh Air, we begin R&B, rockabilly, and early rock and roll week, featuring interviews with influential performers and songwriters. We hear from Elvis Presley's guitarist, Scotty Moore, and from Carl Perkins, one of the early rockabilly musicians. He wrote and performed Blue Suede Shoes. Later, it was one of Elvis's early hits. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, clouds with possibility of a thunder shower, and some of those showers might bring some brief gusty winds along. High 74. Tonight, mainly clear, a low of 51. For Tuesday, a thunderstorm in the afternoon, slightly cooler, high 68. And looking ahead, expect a showery weather experience late Thursday night through Friday afternoon. On Point is coming up next from WBUR in Boston.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Theater,
An updated vintage movie theater with new releases, film festivals, nostalgic screenings, live music events, and more. Information and schedule at thecalicoontheater.com.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.